You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Hello. Welcome to Guys Who Like Musicals, the weekly show about all things Broadway from two guys who like musicals. I'm your host, Dan Tracy. Unfortunately, Joe's sweet baritone will be missed from today's broadcast, because he is on vacation with his lovely wife, Alex Fink, who we interviewed in the first week. And so let's get on with the show. This week, we're talking about the Cats trailer, Little Shop of Horrors off-Broadway, and Tina Turner's final casting coming to Broadway this fall. As always, we'll do things we love and interview with my agent, Chuck Bodner. Stick around.
So an actor is saying his lines, and then out of nowhere, he just starts singing.
5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, first, we're going to start with this Cats trailer. Joe and I had a chance to talk about it last week, so I'm going to plug that in right here.
I think it's the stuff of nightmares.
Why?
It's people's faces. It's like Judi Dench's face CGI'd into a cat's, like, body, kind of like a human fur thing. It was really scary. Like,
yeah, I think that the thing that they missed was that it's not cats unless you have like the cat face,
right? Unless it's
right,
a person
like the cat nose. And my friend Tony, who's on the Cats tour, was like, yeah, if you, the thing that makes them cats is the cat nose and mouth,
right?
And if you just have a human face on it, that's why it was so unsettling. I was like, why does this look so weird? Because I was like definitely into the movement.
Well, of course. I mean,
and the actual cinematography. And like, obviously, you know how I feel about cats. I think it's like totally sexy. So I was like totally into these furry animals, which is so weird.
I was talking about this with Patty Murin at the show last night, because Cats, she said that Cats was the first show that she ever saw on Broadway. And so she has this love-hate relationship with it, because it is the thing that started like her whole life and career, but it's also Cats, which is about nothing.
Right.
But I said the same thing. Cats is so sexy. But this was very strange to watch like human faces in the CGI stuff, and it just was really scary. So
yeah,
I
want
to
really
see Andy's movement. I'm excited to see Andy Blankenbuehler, who did Bandstand.
And I got to be honest, I mean, I don't love cats. Like, being a non-dancer wasn't like my first. That and Chorus Line are the shows I'm like, ugh,
I love Chorus Line.
I'm probably stupid for not liking Chorus Line, but yeah, I just have never been drawn to it. Same thing with Cats. But I have enjoyed the dancing and stuff, so I was interested to see that. I have a feeling it's a conscious producerial choice so that we can recognize Taylor Swift's face.
Well, of course.
And James Corden's face.
Of course.
You know?
And it's not like,
and
they're
clearly made that choice.
Well, and it's obviously like they're not going to do like the Grinch, where, you know, each person has to sit in the makeup chair for 5 hours.
Clearly, they chose not to do makeup. They've done this like very kind of watercolory fur on the face.
It feels
it's like totally weird.
It feels like an app. It feels like one of these things
I
could put my face on a cat human's body and just like repost it to Instagram. Yeah. And yet it's James Corden and Judi Dench and it's right. like, and Taylor Swift.
And Ian McKellen. And I gotta be honest, like, I'd see Idris anything Elba. With like, Ian McKellen.
Like, this cast is unbelievable.
And don't forget Jason Derulo.
Yeah. They hung on Jason Derulo's face during
the... He gave a wink, bro.
During the trailer, they're on Jason Derulo way too long.
They just really wanted you to settle into like, oh, that is Jason Derulo.
Huh. I'm excited because when you get down to it, when you see it, I'm sure when it gets down to it, you're going to be able to see the dancing really unadulterated. Like, it'll be clean. You'll get to see, because, like, it's a lot of, like, Andy Blankenbuehler's dancers. Guys from Hamilton, guys from Bandstand. My buddy Corey Snyder did the Out of Town of Bandstand and Paper Mill. Like, some of the best dancers in New York and London, around the world, are in this movie. You're going to be able to see that. But the trailer just gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Next up, Jonathan Groff to lead off-Broadway Little Shop of Horrors. The production, which is scheduled to begin previews September 17th and to open October 17th at the West Side Theater off-Broadway, will reunite Mr. Groff with director Michael Mayer. The duo previously worked together on Spring Awakening. Little Shop of Horrors, with music by Alan Menken and book and lyrics by Howard Ashman, is, for those of you who don't know, a comedy about a large, blood-sucking, flesh-eating plant. It's based off of the 1960 movie, and it opened off-Broadway in 1982, ran for 5 years. It was a big, like, off-Broadway success. And then there was an off-Broadway revival in 2003. It's done very frequently at schools and community theaters. Jake Gyllenhaal played the role of Seymour in an Encores production in 2015 that everyone loved. And I think this is a really good fit for John Groff. I think he'll do really well with the comedy and the kind of everyman quality that is required for Seymour. Tammy Blanchard is a two-time Tony nominee for How to Succeed in Business and Gypsy. And she's an Emmy winner for Life with Judy Garland. And she's playing Audrey. I don't know a lot about her, but I've only heard great things, and I'm excited to see this. Christian Borle, two-time Tony winner for Something Rotten and Peter and the Starcatcher, is probably the most perfect Oren that you could find. I don't know how you can call something a revival in this sense, but I get the feeling that with producers attached like Hunter Arnold and directors attached like Michael Mayer, that they have their sights set on taking this to Broadway. There's a lot of theaters open, and it's interesting to see a cast with this profile that would work in this small venue. We will see and keep you updated on that. Next up, Tina Turner has announced additional casting for the upcoming Tina Turner musical. Daniel J. Watts will star opposite Adrian Warren as Ike Turner. He last appeared on Broadway in Hamilton. He's joined by a company that includes Stephen Booth, Nick Burrows, our waitress friend Kayla Davion, Charlie Franklin, my buddy David Jennings, Robert Lindsay, Ross Lakitas. This is a pretty stellar cast. I'm pretty excited to see guys like Charlie and Ross getting opportunities to lead Broadway companies like this. We've all known that Stephen Booth was a big star for a long time, but this is an awesome shot for Charlie and Ross, and I'm really excited to see them get this opportunity. Performances begin October 12th at the Lunfontaine with an opening night of My Birthday, November 7th, so be sure to check out tickets. The show has gotten rave reviews in London, and Adrian Warren is already being speculated as a Tony nominee and the front runner for lead actress in a musical, so this is not to be missed. Get it before those tickets are $400 a piece. Okay, now it's time for Things We Love.
Do you know what would happen if you got caught? You got lucky, Harry.
I made it this far on my own, so don't you tell me what I can't do.
That little clip was Leslie Odom Jr., Tony winner for Hamilton, speaking with Cynthia Erivo, Tony winner from The Color Purple. I couldn't be more excited to see these two actors specifically getting these big Hollywood breaks. This movie looks unreal. And to see Cynthia Erivo getting breaks like this, obviously we've known that Leslie has kind of gone to a new level in his career recently, post-Hamilton fame, you know, with his nationwide commercial and films like Murder on the Orient Express. He's come to this next level, but it's so exciting to see that Cynthia is doing that same thing, playing the lead in this film that's surely going to get some awards attention. You know, I have been obsessed with Cynthia since the moment I stepped into The Color Purple. Just a quick story before we move on to our interview with Chuck. Because we're in Things We Love, I had to be escorted from the theater at Color Purple because I was crying so hard at her performance. This woman brings Oscar-level acting with Grammy Award-winning singing. She is unlike anyone I've ever seen live. She's more dropped in than you could ever imagine. She just transcends. And there were so many standing ovations that the show was so much longer than it needed to be. And I was hysterically sobbing. The diaphragmatic spasms from the fact that I was just at a loss for how beautiful this performance was. The woman next to me was English and she kept tapping me on the shoulder and she was like, "Are you okay? Are you gonna make it? You know, no, I'm not. Carry me home. I'm dead." So I'm really excited for this movie and for Cynthia and for the fact that we're, you know, even telling these stories. A high budget biopic about Harriet Tubman is just something that I think we all needed and didn't know. And I'm just so happy that that's the place where the industry is right now. So go check out the trailer. Harriet will be in theaters November 1st. And the world premiere is at the Toronto Film Festival a few weeks prior. All right, now it's time for our interview with Chuck Bodner. Whenever anybody hears that I'm with BRS Gage, they always bring up Chuck. He's one of these guys that is just the right amount of old school, just the right amount of that old-fashioned, hardworking, charming agent that you hear about and you see in the movies. But he's got one of the most beautiful hearts you've ever seen. I've always kind of felt like we've had this brotherly relationship. He's done a lot for me in my career, and I'm so honored that he was willing to come on the show. This is, again, back in the beginning of our time interviewing, so there's definitely some noise in there, and it doesn't sound as good as I think the future interviews are going to sound as we keep expanding this idea we have. But it's a really interesting conversation. We talk about showcasing, we talk about school, we talk about how he became an agent, advice he has for actors. We talked about some actors that stood out to him and what he thinks about the business and the state of things right now. I think it's a really interesting conversation and I hope you enjoy it. Let us know your thoughts. And without further ado, here's Chuck Bodner.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
Morning, everyone.
We've got Chuck Bodner with us here today. Say hello, Chuck.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Thank you for being here.
They might know me as Charles, though.
Charles Bodner. Chuck has been an agent for how long?
Total about 30, over 30 years.
Wow, you're old. Just kidding.
Started early.
Be nice to the guests.
That's amazing.
No, okay, that's amazing. 30 years.
Yeah. 21 with the agency that I'm with now. So, well, I'll give you the Chuck Bodner story.
Yeah, let's start from the beginning. That's where we wanted to go.
I graduated college and did a couple internships here in New York and then went to work for CBS in radio, actually, and knew that wasn't my...
listen to that radio voice.
Yeah. That wasn't my plan of action. So then then I went over to MTV to work for MTV at the time when they were playing videos, and worked for them for about a year and then shot over to an ad agency and TV commercial production. And that's when I met some agents and I said, oh, damn, that's what I'd love to do. So threw my resume out, met some people, networked myself, and then got a job at an agency called STE, which is now called Paradigm. And I worked in their commercial department for a little over a year as an assistant and then decided, yeah, this is what I love, but I want to get into legit. I was spending some time after work reading scripts and talking to the legit department. So I was like, that's what I want to do. You know, I love film. I love movies. I love television. I love theater. So they weren't hiring in that area, so I moved to Peter Strain's office and started as an assistant there and worked my way up to an agent and then stayed there, ran the New York office for about 5 years at Peter's office, and then David Shaw, who was an agent in New York for BRS Gage, left to move to LA, and then I replaced him there, and that was 21 years ago. And still love
it. That's where you are now.
And yeah,
you
guys, still love
you
it.
You merged with Gage Group.
It's BRS Gage. We merged with Gage about 5 years ago.
Cool.
4.5 years ago.
Take me back to before that. I want to go like all the way back to like Little Chuck.
Oh,
like,
seriously?
What did your parents do?
My parents were, my dad, blue collar, was a longshoreman in Newark, New Jersey. Knew all the Jersey boys.
Wow.
Moved into a town called Irvington, New Jersey from Newark when I was little and went through the school system there and had a brother and a sister and always knew I wanted to do something in this business. And my dad was sports. My uncle played for the Cleveland Indians. My brother was, almost minor league. He went from college. He was a center fielder and then he got hurt. But I didn't... unfortunately for my dad, I didn't follow that path. I sort of got the other gene. I was doing shows at school and,
going. So you started acting and doing.
Well, I did the theater in high school.
Right.
And then we had a girls' Catholic school in our town, the town over, that needed guys whenever they did a show. So mm-hmm. I used to go over there and do shows. So I did about 5 or 6 shows when I was in high school and then knew that I wasn't very good, but I wanted to be part of that business. I loved what was going on there. And those things.
Right.
So when I went to apply to colleges, I wanted to apply in theater or communications. So I wound up getting accepted to Syracuse, Emerson, and a couple other schools in Montclair State in Jersey, which is where I went. Unfortunately, I shoulda, coulda, woulda. I mean, I wanted to go to Syracuse, but at that time it was like 15,000. Now it's like, 50, I think.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I thought, I don't want all those loans. And, and Montclair was offering me the first 2 years scholarship. And, mm-hmm. So I said, if I'm going to a school that's not too far from my home, I need to do either transfer my sophomore year, my junior year, or study abroad. And that's what I stuck to it. So my junior year, I decided I need to go away. You know, everyone else has these great college experiences. You Michigan people. I'm so jealous. I decided to, a couple of us Americans that were majors in communication with me, decided to, journey over to England. And we did that.
That's cool.
It was great. It was a eye-opening experience. I'd never really been on my own.
Mm-hmm.
My mommy always did the laundry and cooked and all that kind of stuff. So it's just like, it was great. It's best thing I ever decided to do.
So what's your day-to-day like now? Let's start from a recruiting standpoint, in case anybody out there is interested in either doesn't have an agent or is looking to get new agents. What are the processes that you can recommend to people?
That's actually one of my favorite parts of what I do. That's why, I love that to watch you, Dan Tracy, grow. We plucked you out of Michigan and decided that, this is someone we really, really like. And to watch the growth of an actor go from school to Broadway to TV, back to Broadway, back to theater, back to, and then do a film, it's just like, it's really cool. The ways we do it, hasn't changed much over the years. I mean, it's if you do a showcase at some of the good schools, you get agents to go, and we go, and you see somebody you like, and you meet them, and hopefully it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. It's really cool when it does.
How has that shifted in the last, in the age of the showcase?
I actually think it's kind of unfair.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that you can't really get the gist of what an actor or an actress can do from. I mean, you can get a little bit of it from 4 minutes or 3 minutes or whatever you're allowed to do. So, you go there and you see someone do a monologue for 2 minutes and then maybe sing a short song or just do 2 monologues. And you're supposed to, that's their career. That's their career hangs on getting an agent or, a manager from that 4 minutes,
Right.
And you're like, and it's so unfair.
People who don't know how showcases work, basically you spend your entire senior year preparing for this 90-second audition for the industry. And that one moment can, it doesn't have to make or break, right?
It shouldn't
make or break, right? Like, we live in a world now where just you can make a career for yourself, but in many ways that moment can make or break your career. And I wonder, what's your opinion on school right now? Is it worth it to pay all that money?
I just want everyone to know too that there are situations where someone may not get response from a showcase or may get one or two where everyone else is getting 8 or 9 or 10, you know. But that shouldn't bring you down because, you know, if you really want to do this, you'll really make it happen. So there's a, you know, you just got to go out there, audition, go on open calls, network yourself and meet people, you know, meet other actors maybe that can help you out and just make it happen for yourself. You know, just because you didn't get response from a showcase doesn't mean your career is over, you know. And unfortunately, we see that a lot of times with showcase people. They just get really, really upset, rightfully so. But you know what? Just you're a step behind everybody. So what? You know, just make it happen. You know, there's famous stories. I think, I don't know, I've been going to the Juilliard showcase for years, but I heard that Laura Linney got like zero.
Total
response.
I think that was Alex Sharp too, right? Wasn't it like very few, and then he went on to win a Tony.
It's like you can't go by that 5 or 4 minutes. You know, you'll make it up. And like any business, if you really want to do this, you'll work hard and make it. You might have to work a little harder than maybe someone else, but you gotta get out there and do it yourself.
Well, and I think everybody has to work harder than we think we do, right? Yeah. Like, I'm so grateful because, like, Chuck and the people at BRS Gage, like, made my career, you know? If I'm not sure that I had the work ethic at 23 to push through if I hadn't gotten an agent. But I'm looking around now, being on Broadway, having gotten these jobs and done these tours and realizing, like, the way to be ahead and stay ahead in this business is to work harder than everybody else no matter what. Right? Like, that is the only thing. And especially now, I want to get your opinion on people who are like doing it themselves and making their own stuff, which, you know, like, not a big deal, like, is us right now, you know, but like, you know, how do you feel about your clients doing, making their own web series or making their own content? Or how do you feel about finding people that way? You know, is that something that you guys are experiencing?
Absolutely. I mean, the showcase isn't the only way that we find people. I mean, we find people through a lot of people through recommendations and through, if we see a show, we go to see a client in a show and there's someone else in that production that we say, oh, wow, you know, they're great. You know, whether it's Broadway, off Broadway, you know, a film, even a TV show or so, you know, there's so many ways to find talent now. And this is great. You know, the social media game now is also, you know, we don't use it that much yet, but if our assistants see somebody on a social media, not even a podcast, but what am I thinking of? Like something on YouTube or something, you know, we'll jump on that too. So the showcase isn't the only way because not everybody goes to school either, you know, not everybody goes to those universities.
Yeah. Well, that was my question sort of to the idea that, you know, the showcase is a slightly newer idea. Maybe it's 20 years old, but like, you know, you used to, in the age of the New York theater actor, like agents would go see their off Broadway production, you know, mm-hmm. Jeff Daniels gets an agent because he's, you know, in some off Broadway production mm-hmm. of whatever. And I guess, you know, does that still exist? And you're saying it totally does,
you know,
and people can go to open calls. They can grind it out for mm-hmm. themselves. They can make stuff and still, you know, you're still going to see it.
Right.
And be able to represent them.
And always keep in contact with the directors and creative people that you're doing shows with, wherever it may be, because you never know where they may go either. And it's always good to have that networking tool behind you as well. Mm. So like, you know, Dan has recommended people to us, you know, some directors that we know have recommended people to us. It's a community and everybody works together. And if you work together in the right way, it could happen.
How about favorite showcase? Like, who have you seen in the last 15 years and you thought that person? And now you've watched them and seen them kind of become something. Is there anybody, good stories like that? I'm sure you have hundreds.
Well, yeah, one of them is, I just discussed this the other day because it was Adam Driver out of Juilliard. Like, you sit there in that showcase and you go, oh, wait, this kid, I mean, yeah, he's not classically handsome. You know, he's 6'20", you know.
Right.
And he's, you know, kind of looks a little odd, but you go, but when I saw him act and I saw him do, and I had seen one of the shows that he was in too, you go, all right, this dude's got it. You know, he's brilliant.
What was it? What do you think it was?
He just did it.
It's so intangible.
There was nothing, you know, it just was natural. You know, and I left there and I went, this kid either probably already has a representative or he's got 700 on his back. You know what I mean?
Right.
Ready for, and look what happened. You know, there's a Jennifer Lawrence too. A couple other people from Juilliard that you.
Did you see like Jessica Chastain?
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, Jessica Chastain. Yeah. And,
I love her.
Viola Davis is at Yale, not to mention the people that we also groomed.
No, I would love to hear about that.
You know, whether it's Patrick Wilson or Joe Manganiello or Megan Hilty or Kristen Chenoweth, you know, they all came through our door. Audra McDonald, I represented at Peter Strain's office for 3 years. Put her in Carousel, put her, you know, in Masterclass. And
that's unbelievable, right? What is that like? So you see her and you're, you know, sending somebody along that journey. What is that, you know, to those massive jobs?
She actually came through. I worked with a wonderful agent at Peter Strain's who unfortunately, I hate to bring this up, but just passed away last week. Terrible accident. But she had found Audra through Juilliard. And so she kind of came with the agency. Do you know what I mean? But she went to the Secret Garden tour, believe it or not, and saw Audra as that, I forget the name of the role. It's very much like an ensemble role that steps out.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, this girl's got talent, you know, and she went on and started working with her. That came, worked with us. Audra came with her, and then the rest is history. She won the Tony for Carousel, and you knew that was something special, too.
That's
because
so
the
cool.
girl is just, like, ridiculous.
Yeah. Right,
she
yeah.
could do everything.
And what about I love the Patrick Wilson story. I mean, a massive fan of his whole trajectory. But what was that, you know, he's coming out of Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah.
And what was that, what did you see and how did that work for?
Well, with Patrick, I don't mean to toot his horn because he's sitting here, but like also like Dan, you see somebody that, they did some musicals, but it went, for me especially, went beyond that.
Totally.
You know, it's like, they could sing and, you know, there's certain roles that they could do on Broadway, but then he could do some film, you know, or he could definitely be in a series, or he could do a half hour, or he could do, you know, a play, not necessarily a musical. And that's also what gets you excited too. And so with Patrick, it was there. It was definitely there.
And so when did you meet Golden Boy Billy Magnuson? Did you meet him at
Billy's
North Carolina?
Great story. Yeah, I went to...
Everybody wants to be Billy at BRS Gage.
I went to...
And abroad.
Yeah, right. Everywhere else,
I used to go
too.
To North Carolina School of the Arts, it used to be called. But about 3 years in a row, I went once with Tiffany from Telsey's. And they would have a casting director and an agent go down there and do a seminar every year. And we'd talk to the students. And then we'd go see their show at night. And then we'd watch their monologues. And we'd watch their scenes. And we'd give them feedback. And... when I went down there to watch the seniors, I think it must have been 13 years ago, 12, 13 years ago. And it was a great class. Their class was great. And I saw a couple people that I really liked, and one of them was Billy.
Yeah.
But I didn't do anything at that point because it was only like November, December, and they still had the whole rest of the year to go. So they were half of the students were going to do Oklahoma West Side Story at Ravinia Festival in Chicago, wherever it is up there. And Billy was one of them. He was like cast as Snowboy or something. So half of that senior class had to come to New York and do their showcase early because they were going to be at the Ravinia doing West Side Story when the other people were coming, like when it was actually scheduled for. So about 10 of them came in, I would say February or March, and Billy was one of them. Sat and watched him and sat next to a casting director, and
who had been down there too to teach class, and I saw three of them. One was Ashley Morris, one was Matt Loria, and one was Billy, that I really, really liked. And the casting director nudged me and said, the blonde one, you need to jump on that right now, you know, because he had been down there, you know, taught them too, and you know, watched his presentation that they were going to do and everything. So marked them down on our sheets of paper, and the three of them, you know, they came in, and Billy actually sat in my office for, I would probably think it was about an hour and a half.
Wow.
Yeah. And anyone who knows Billy, and I think Dan knows Billy, it's fun. You know,
right, right.
You don't just get someone sitting there just talking about the business. It's, you talk about everything, you know, it's great. We clicked on that level.
Right.
And I think he knew, and I knew, that this was going to be a team that, you know, whoever else he met, it was, didn't matter. You know?
Yeah.
I hope that's the way he felt, but.
That's how I felt too.
Yeah. So then, you know, got him some television, got him some film, and then it's been a lot of hard work for both of us, but enjoyable, and he's where he is because he worked hard and we all worked hard. And it was, you know, so
awesome. He's going to be in that James Bond movie.
Yeah,
My brother just texted me yesterday. It's like, what's Billy playing? I was like, dude, I do not know. And if I did, I wouldn't tell you.
Chuck probably won't tell us either. He's a bad guy.
Nice. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Opposite Rami Malek.
Yeah.
So cool. Love that. Absolutely. So sick.
So cool.
I have one shooting in London and Paris and Jamaica. And
all the cool. That's so awesome.
I had one of the coolest, one of my most fun audition experiences was with him outside of, I don't even remember what the movie was, but I'd never met him. You knew him. And we were sitting outside of it was just the two of us outside of this audition. And he was so funny and so just like a caffeinated 12-year-old, just excited to be there.
You hit it.
Yeah. And he's like, who are you? And I'm like, well, I'm Joe. And actually, you know, Dan Tracy, good friend, and he's like, oh yeah, and he knew everything about he talked to me like I was the most important person in the world for like
That's
5 minutes.
And he means it.
And then he like threw his baseball cap on and ran out the door, and I was like, what just happened? He was like a hurricane. I was like, who? But he's but that's very cool because he's one of these guys that we both look up to. Who's just, he's done it all.
Tony nominated for Vanya, and then he did a Spielberg film,
comedy,
and
dramas,
and Maniac, and he does
all of it.
Yeah,
which is so nice.
So when you talk about like you working hard, back to the kind of the day to day, the agent, what is that like? How does the process of you know, if nobody, people don't know anything about the business, how does that work?
Like in our office, we kind of work, I think, like a lot of other medium-sized agencies. It's we have an LA office as well, so we're very hands-on with them every day. You know, we talk to them 2, 3, 4 times a day. But in the morning, we all the agents get in, the assistants, and we return our messages and our emails that we have to return. And then we all meet, all the agents meet in the conference room at, say, like 10:30, and
So he's missing that for this, so.
Exactly.
Thank you for being here.
And then we all sit around the table and we discuss if anybody went to the theater the night before, if anybody saw a film, if we had people on television. We discuss the night. We discuss what's going to happen in the day. And then we do our breakdowns, which, for anyone who doesn't know what that is, each morning and afternoon, agents get a list of projects that are being worked on all across the United States. It used to be just New York for New Yorkers, but now we get LA breakdowns. We get, you know, things that are happening in Atlanta, Chicago, and it's theater, film, and television. And it'll list, if it's a movie, it'll list all the roles that are available in the movie. If it's a play, they list all the roles. And then we're responsible for submitting our clients who are right for each role. And we put them down, and then our assistants send the submission for each project to the casting director that's casting the project. And then we as the agents are responsible for trying to get the actors in. You know, so we call Telsey or we call Meg Simon or whoever it is, and we say, you know, Dan Tracy's right for, you know, Joe in this pilot. You know, would you see, you know, he's great. He just did this. It's our job then to sell them to the producer, director, or casting director, mostly the casting director. And then they call them in, they get an appointment, they do their thing, they get a call back, and then
they book the job.
Then they book the job. And the rest is history.
And the rest is history.
But then during the day, it's also our responsibility to, you know, keep everything else in the business going. Like, you know, we'll call Dan with an audition and we, you know, here are the sides, you know, do you need, you know, what else do you need? Do you need the script? Then we read the script and then, you know, do you have any questions? You know, it's all like talking to the casting director, seeing, getting feedback. There's a million other things that we do. You know, but the main objective is for us as a team to work together and get jobs, you know. But if I think the win for you guys as actors is if you go in, you do your best job. If you don't get it, fine. But if the casting director calls us back and says, Dan Tracy was great, he's not going to get it. But, you know, he did a really good job. That's the win for all of us.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's the win.
If Dan went in for a film and they come back and they said, I don't think Dan's been in here before. It's like, I don't think he was on his game today. You know, what was the feedback? Oh, he did this, or, you know, he didn't know the material. We call him and we discuss it next time. You know that for the next time. But I think the win as the actor is just going into these offices repeatedly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And performing, you know, well. And that's the job.
That's the
right?
win.
The job is auditioning and not getting the job.
Yeah.
You know?
If you get the job, that's like winning. That's the lotto.
Totally.
Totally.
But granted, we wouldn't be in business if you guys didn't book the jobs, because that's what it's all about. But our main objective is to have the actors do the best they can and to keep that rolling.
Yeah. It's nice to hear that from you, because they taught us that in school. They're always like, you know, if you go in and the casting director, you know, calls your agent back and you get that feedback that, you know, you did a good job, that's all that you can control.
Right. And I think that's what's the nice thing about sort of the approach of the medium-sized agency and finding, you know, even if a lot of people talk about their agents, and this I've only brag about my agent, but a lot of people that I
You're
work with
that,
will that's true. I'm only saying because you're sitting here. A lot of people that I work with are like, oh, you know, well, I'm with this person. I know you've probably never heard of it. And it's like, well, yeah, sure, but if you have a relationship with a person, that's the only thing that matters. Mm-hmm. Because if that person will actually get on the phone and mm-hmm. say that they believe in you, that's what you need more than...
And if they're going to work hard for you.
I wouldn't want to be at a massive agency at this point in my career, because there would be that pressure and that you wouldn't have that same relationship.
You know, and I always tell actors too, and it's, I feel the same way about being an agent. If I wake up in the morning and I don't love what I do and want to go to do what I do, then I shouldn't be doing it.
Exactly.
I mean, granted, there are days where you're like, oh, you know, it's raining. I wish I could just
sit
and watch, you know bad television all day. But no, I it's a joy for me to work with these guys, with Dan and everybody, and the people I work with. You know, it's like, we love working together. We love doing what we do, and we have fun at work. We work hard, but we have fun.
Yeah.
And it shows in the success of, knock on wood, of the agency. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on some of the shows this year? What's your favorite?
It's been a weird year, I think. It's great. You know, let's put it this way. I know we all say it, but I'm a little tired of the movies becoming, you know, Broadway shows.
Yeah.
But look, you're in one now.
Yeah. I'm in one now.
And it's great. It's a fantastic show.
We're both in one.
It's a fantastic show. But you know, I love when you see something original and new, and I wish that would happen a little bit more, but it will.
And it does.
I started in this business, and fortunately, I started in this business when it was Broadway and the theater industry in New York was on the downslide. Like, there was nothing coming to Broadway. It was like Times Square was a mess.
Like late 90s, early 2000s?
No, like late 80s.
Late 80s.
Yeah. Early 90s.
Early 90s.
And then, you know, it was like Broadway was like, they were selling theaters. It's like that beautiful theater near our office on 51st Street. It was the Mark Hellinger, is now a church. You know, it's where Wicked is. You know,
the church of, it's like Times Square Church.
Yeah, that used to be the Mark
Times
Hellinger.
Church, right?
Wow. Like, you know, really major show start. I think Sound of Music was there. And the late 80s and early 90s were so hard for theater that theater owners were renting out the theaters to other people. So they rented it out to this church, and it became so lucrative. So they went out, I think, gave them a 30-year lease, 40, 50-year lease for it, because they needed money, because no one was producing Broadway shows and no one was producing theater in New York. But then a little man named Andrew Lloyd Webber came in, and came in with Cats, and then, you know, it sort of everything started to snowball from there, and things started to pick up in the theater again, and it became, you know, was the British Invasion, but then other
a lot
Americans.
Of Disney. Yeah, and Disney comes
then
in.
Then Disney, perfect, Disney right. came in, and then they you revitalized know. 42nd Street yeah. And made it, you know, Disneyland over there, but it, thank God, because, you know, it was pretty bleak, you know, but yeah. now it's thriving. I mean, I love the fact that producers can't find theaters for their shows now because there's so many successful plays and musicals running, and it's thriving, which is fantastic. And, you know, let's keep it going.
Yeah. So is there, do you have a favorite of the season so far, or things that you're looking forward to?
He
or,
doesn't want to pick.
Oh, you don't have to pick. You also don't have to pick. You don't want to, like...
No, I'll pick my favorite play, is hands down, was Ferryman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Brilliant. It's Ferryman is just a marriage of a really great cast that seemed so cohesive to me. I saw the Brits, you know, so it was just very... I watched that, and it was like watching a movie, and it was just like... It's over 3 hours, and I've seen some shows that were 90 minutes that seem way longer than that.
Totally.
But the time just flew by because you were watching people that are mastering this craft, and whether it's the direction or the set design or the, I mean, there was a baby in the show, and there was a 10-year-old
right.
in the show.
Right.
And everyone was on point. It was just like, that's when you sit back and you go, I left the theater and I said, this is why I love this business. You know, and I mentioned it to everybody, and they all, you know, some of my friends went to see it, and they all would text me right afterward and said, I'm so glad I'm an actor, or I'm so glad that, you know, I'm in this bit, you know, that's the joy of it.
Yeah. My parents were here last weekend, and my dad, who is also in manufacturing, he makes labels, for a living.
Oh,
he
nice.
Loves the theater, but he's a very, like, you know, casual theater goer, sees me and stuff. And I was like, Dad, you got to see The Ferryman. Mm-hmm. And that is like, he walked out of there and was blown away, completely blown away.
Theater at its best.
It really is. Great. And it moves so quickly. So we're just plugging The Ferryman. Maybe we'll get a sponsorship from The Ferryman. Hey,
Ferryman, if you're listening.
Guys who like musicals, brought to you by The Ferryman.
Oh, musical-wise, I don't know. I just, I got to tell you, I wish a lot more made me happier this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna, you know, badmouth shows, but I think there's a lot of mediocre product this year out there. But there are a few that I enjoyed, maybe one or two. There are a few that I really didn't enjoy, and then there's some that are just right in the middle. There are a lot of them right in the middle that, you know, you enjoy some things about it, and, you know, maybe not so much other things. But again, that's what the theater's for. You know, I may have not liked somebody, but you guys something, but you guys may have said, "Oh, I love that," you know,
or right.
You know, I used to work with an agent who I'm still very good friends with, Tim, and we text back and forth all the time every time we see theater, and sometimes we butt heads, and he's like, "I love that." And it's like, "What, are you crazy? That was horrible."
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but that's the beauty of the theater, you know? So, but most of the time, I'm right.
That's my favorite thing, though, when you go see, like, there's a lot this season that is pretty sort of divisive, you know, like people go see Oklahoma or Hadestown or these things, and half of the people I talk to is the greatest thing they've ever seen. Half the people are like, I couldn't stand it. And actually, like, I love that. Let's sit and, like, have a drink and talk about why you hated something and why
that.
I love it.
Right.
You know, that's my favorite.
I just did that last week, I think it was, because we both saw a show, which I'm not going to
Yeah, right.
He actually liked it more than I did, and we talked about it.
I was
text.
Being nice.
and it was, like, great. It was that dialogue that we have, and he would go, "Yeah, you're kind of right." And then I go to him, "Yeah, that's a good point." You know, but, you know, that's the beauty of
discourse,
it,
right?
Yeah.
And that's
conversation.
That's important to lean into, I think, too, because you can't be safe. Mm-hmm. There are a couple shows this season that I've heard sort of from the inside that they were afraid to go in A direction or B direction because they didn't want to be off-putting. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, well, then we're just making a bunch of mediocre stuff that nobody's going to be entertained by.
Don't be milk toast. Like,
nobody goes to the theater to, like, sit in silence and not laugh. You know, it's about, like, this experience of polarizing emotions for everyone in the building, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the same as going to see a movie where it's just kind of this experience that they lay on you.
Mm-hmm.
To get people riled up.
That's the beauty of things like the band's visit may not have been for everybody, but it's a little different. You know, it's not cookie cutter. You know, Hadestown, I haven't seen it yet, but I hear the same thing, you know. But that's when theater thrives, when you sort of throw away that what am I supposed to do rather than what do we want to do?
Right, right, you know, right.
Let's make it different. Let's
What's the best way to serve this story and make it different and stand out?
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
Well, Anything else? We just talked to you for. You probably have to go to work.
Oh, this was fun. Dude.
We got to, like, you know, go get Dan more jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is actually really fun. No. I'd love to do it again if you want to have
Oh, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the Mets and maybe the Jets.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We should have thrown that in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we talk about sports. We still like sports. You know.
Yeah.
You
grew up,
I love sports. Yeah. I love watching. You know, Dan knows I'm a huge Jet and Met fan, but we butt heads about that all the time. But
yeah.
Someone's a front runner over there.
Not my fault. My teams always win.
Don't be friends with any sports fans from Boston. You know,
exactly.
It's just horrible
because they're jealous.
He's probably right.
No, he is right. Chuck, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
for
you
chatting
guys,
with us.
It was fun. It was fun.
Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe on Apple Podcast. You can find us on SoundCloud or Spotify if that's what you prefer. We'd love a rate or review on Apple Podcasts. That really helps us to find new listeners. And as always, follow us on Instagram. Be sure to send us a DM if you have any feedback, if you hated this week's episode, or if you want to hear something in the future, or if you have a question for Chuck, I'd be happy to relay it to him. Don't send me your resume because I won't send, just kidding. If you want to send me your resume, sure. Maybe I'll give it to Chuck. This has been Guys Who Like Musicals. Thanks for listening. To segue us out of this week's episode, I'm going to include some of those performances from the Broadway Blackout 2 weeks ago. I can't believe that we spoke about the Broadway Blackout for 7 minutes and didn't include the best part of the Broadway Blackout, which was the Broadway cast coming outside to give free performances. So here's Andre DeShields and the cast of Hadestown outside of the Walter Kerr on the night of the Blackout. Ooh, it's a blackout.
Ooh, it's a blackout!
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.